I'm Lauren from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is PopXCast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, step out of your TARDIS and warm up your chimichangas, because this is PopXCast.
You are listening to PopXCast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopXCast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And welcome, everyone. This is PopXCast, episode number 45, coming to you on this January the 22nd, 2017. And joining me here is the lovely Miss Lindsay Badger, joining us here live on PopX. What's up, girl?
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
It's going good. It's so good to have you back on PopXCast. Yeah. Typically, Lindsay is holding down the fort and just doing some awesome things over in the chat room.
And if you don't see me, I'm usually there.
She's
not
always
too far away.
Around, yes. So, we have some really cool stuff lined up for you this week. And I don't know if you could tell by the opening intro, but we have an X-Men themed show this week. And we're super excited for that. So, hey guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live right here on the PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
That's right. And I am Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky okie. And if you missed last week's episode 44, we discussed all the hot games and consoles that are coming up. And it was such a fun episode last week, you guys. You need to check out our official website at popxcast.com and go check that out, and all of our other great past shows from PopXCast.
Absolutely, and thank you, Miss Lindsay Badger, for that. I'm just getting ready to load up the old chat room here and see who all is hanging out with us.
While you're checking that out, let me make sure to tell everybody to go over to Google Play or iTunes and make sure to click that subscribe button and catch up on some amazing shows from PopX Archive. And while you're there, please give us a 5-star rating and review, because we certainly appreciate all of that love.
Well said, Lindsay Badger. You know, it's almost as if you've done this a few times.
Once or twice. While you're checking out the chat, I want to say hello to our favorite fans. Luke, our faithful weekly listener that always shows up. Thank you for coming again this week. And our friend Michael Murray is also hanging out with us in the chat tonight.
That's awesome. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us in the chat and joining us at PopX.live. Be sure, if you're watching this live right now as we record this, share it out on your social media, on your Instagrams, on your Twitters, on Facebook, whatever you got, whatever you're connected to, that'd be awesome. Share this on your page so we can get some friends over hanging out with us, okay? So we are about ready to go into the news. Are you ready for this?
Let's roll that beautiful bean footage.
All right, here we go. Some PopX news is coming your way right now.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXCast.com.
All right, leading us on the top of the news this week, we have a hashtag from YoPopX to feature, and Lindsay Badger got to go and do something really freaking awesome this week. Lindsay Badger, tell us what you did.
I feel like it's a huge privilege and an honor to be able to go see the Symphony of the Goddesses, The Legend of Zelda.
Wow.
Symphony. It is all of the music from the games of all the Zelda games.
What?
Together into a miraculous 2-hour show with a live orchestra, or a symphony, I guess, a live orchestra with the chorus behind it, and they're singing, and on this massive screen, they have all of the shots from the games of all the action and the characters.
Did they do Epona's theme?
I believe so. They did do a little bit of that. There was a couple of songs that I wish that they would have played that they missed out on, like the Lon Lon Ranch. They didn't have Lon Lon Ranch, which I was really sad about. But there was so much music cram-packed into that show. It doesn't surprise me that they had to select, choose, and pick from what they could and could not play. But it was just amazing. My husband and I went. It was a super, super classy, geeky date night. And it was a great time. And I recommend anybody that loves Zelda as much as I do to go check that out.
Awesome. Well, I'm a little jealous. And of course, Lindsay used our hashtag YoPopX. And then it came in on my feed this week. And I'm like, holy cow, that is really cool. That is nerdy. And I just wanted to give an honorable mention to last week, which I saw come in on the feed. Somehow the feed delayed on my end, but you had done some cupcakes in the theme of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I did. My son turned 3 and he wanted to do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I made him cupcakes and a cake that had all the turtle geekiness. And you know
what, Lindsay Badger, if I'm geeky you get a enough, badge. You get a badge of geekiness.
Oh,
You get the badge.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to cherish that forever. Thank you, Joe.
Oh, well, all right, guys. Let's get into the news. And of course, if you have something really fun that you're doing or you saw or you're recording or you're at a show or you're at a comic shop, use the hashtag YoPopX and let us know about it, okay?
Yeah. So, I like to see all the good stuff.
Me too. Leading us out on the top of the news this week. Many are curious about James Gunn's, will he integrate Ego, the living planet, into Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2? Now, we've heard rumors about this giant planet that is a living, breathing head, if you will. And now fans have their first look at its human form. What? Look at this. Okay. The character is being played by Kurt Russell in the film, and has said previously that it is a different take on the character than what is traditionally in the comics, and the focus will be on the relationship between Russell and Chris Pratt, a.k.a. Star-Lord, rather than the living planet attacking the Earth. Still, fans will no doubt see his true form at some point. So he's a shapeshifter? Kurt Russell's a shapeshifter? That's interesting.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell.
Can we just say Kurt freaking Russell?
Right? Yeah. It's Kurt Russell, you
guys. He's the 80s guy. I love that. My favorite Kurt Russell movie, The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing.
There you go. All right. Well, everyone wants to know if Jerome is going to become the Joker on Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the love interest of the Clown Prince of Crime? It has been teased that Harley Quinn would appear in Gotham eventually. But in a new interview with executive producer John Stevens, as fans thinking she will appear much sooner, we might see her in episode 22, Stevens says. Stevens also said that the character would act as a launching point for the events of season 4. So we're going to see it before the end of the season, you guys. I have mixed feelings about the Joker right now because I don't know where they're going with it, but it's exciting. And I can't wait to see more.
I have to say, when I saw Jerome on the season premiere of this week's Gotham, and I saw that his coffin from when he was captured by originally, you know, yes, back in season 2, or was it 3? 2, yeah. I get them all mixed up. But supposedly he's dead. But
right.
Did you see the premiere this week?
I did.
Did you notice that his nose was a little more elongated?
Mm-hmm.
He had a little bit of a prosthetic on the end of his nose, and he had more of a diminished.
Yeah. Well, and you know, after they bring him to life, he's got like the whole serious smile thing going on, which he didn't have before. Yeah. So they're definitely morphing him into it. I remember when they first introduced his character, I was like, that's the Joker.
Yeah.
That's the Joker.
And here's what else is really cool about it as well, is we are seeing kind of this group form in the underground setting in an abandoned warehouse building, and they're all like watching these videos of Jerome when he was
creepy.
It was so creepy, but at the same time, it reminds me of Arkham, during the video game Batman Arkham yes. Asylum, when the Joker would have all the prison inmates riot in almost the exact fashion with those clown ha 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 faces and stickers everywhere. Just saying.
I want one of those stickers. Can I get one? Can a girl get a sticker up in here? Because that would be so fun.
It was awesome. So on the note of DC Comics, for lifelong DC fans, now this one is going to hit your wallet a little bit. So I'm just going to go ahead and give you a heads up. A new film auction site is now allowing you to achieve your dreams and own them at the same time, if you're willing to pay the price. The Superman costume worn by none other than Mr. Christopher Reeve and the Batsuit worn by Michael Keaton in Batman Returns are now available on the online auction site. It's Nate D. Sanders Auctions, and they auction movie memorabilia. Man. The suit from Superman is a light blue tunic worn by the late Christopher Reeve. Now, look at that.
It looks like a onesie.
It does look like a onesie. But, that's what he wore. And so,
I know.
The movie was released in 1978, and Reeves wore this specific costume during the film's flying scenes. Now, if you'll notice on the back of the shoulders, there are harness straps, and if you look, there's pockets that come out on the sides where the actual harness straps would come out. Pretty awesome. And the Batsuit as well is up for grabs, and it was worn throughout the 1989. Oh, dude, seriously, look at that.
Batman. He is the Batman to me.
He's a lot of people's Batman. And so it was worn by Mr. Michael Keaton, and it made his big screen debut as the Caped Crusader. And the suit comes mounted on a stand, and it's just over 6 feet tall. These outfits aren't going cheap. As you can probably imagine, the Superman costume starting bid is at $35,000. Now, this was 2 days ago when I checked it, and the Batsuit starts at a pricey $40,000.
Do you think the bank would give me a loan?
See, now, for me personally, I wouldn't be going towards the Christopher Reeve. Now, no disrespect of Christopher Reeve, because I'm a huge Superman. Yeah. But
well, I was thinking for
just,
the Batsuit.
Just look at that Batsuit. Seriously, that's a Tim Burton original.
It's a Tim Burton, Michael Keaton Batsuit, you guys.
I have a feeling that Kevin Smith from Comic Book Men is just going to just buy these up and just put them in his house.
Oh, what's the... The comedian that has the Batmobile, the ventriloquist.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about Jeff Dunham.
Yeah, Jeff Dunham needs this. He needs it right now.
He does. Yeah.
He has the Batmobile, you guys, seriously.
Agreed.
Well, you guys, we're going to still stick with some awesome DC goodness. Last week, it was revealed that Ronnie Raymond is returning to The Flash on the CW, but it's now been confirmed that another former character is speeding back into this series this year. Rick Cosnett, who played Eddie Thawne. Oh, I remember him. Just tweeted that he is definitely coming back to the show, and he revealed that no other plot points or ideas with the message yet. So we're still kind of in a cloud of mystery, but we know another character that we've seen before is coming back to the show. That is so fun.
See, that's the beautiful thing about the multiverse.
But is he going to be like an evil ex-boyfriend?
I don't know.
I don't know. We could speculate for days on what his role's going to be.
Yeah, there's so many like fan rumors going around and rumor mills about, you know, just who is the enemy this year, the big bad, so everybody's trying to figure all this stuff out.
How is Killer Frost and Ronnie going to mix together? You know,
and is Killer Frost eventually going to go bad, or is she going to play the good card and stay good?
No, I think that's what's awesome about her character is that she sits on the fence and goes both ways.
Really?
Not like that. Come on, Joe.
Oh, well, cut it out. Anyway, I don't know why. It must be the storm clouds rolling by or something.
I guess.
All right, since the announcement of casting The Walking Dead's Sonequa Martin-Green as Star Trek's Discovery's lead, yes, you have heard us right. Another name has been dropped, who is Gotham actor James Frain has joined. Oh, we remember him.
Joined
the cast in the role of Sarek, the Vulcan father of the iconic Star Trek, the original series character, Mr. Spock.
They're not even going to have to really point his ears very much, so that'll be good.
Yeah. What was his role in Gotham again? He was that...
he was the bad mayor.
Yeah, he was the guy.
I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was the really bad guy. He went all crazy with the sword and
stuff. Yeah, he went cray-cray. Sarek is the first character from a previous Star Trek series to be confirmed to appear in Star Trek Discovery. So, I mean, Sarek he's playing the iconic role of Spock's father. Wow, that is... that's going to be interesting. And
that's a really cool role to play, though. That would be quite an honor, I would think.
It is. And it's really interesting to see. I mean, I know he's made his film debut and he's done all that, but it's going to be really interesting to see his role in the Star Trek realm, because I know there's so many Star Trek people out there that are huge fans of all this. So,
got to get it right.
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 Oh my goodness. Okay, so the thrilling Twilight Zone Tower of Terror ride at Disney California Adventure Park was shut down earlier this month, which kind of breaks my heart a little bit. Mm. But they shut it down because they are going to be starting the transformation into the Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout.
What?
Members of the press were invited to take a tour of the attraction and provided them with some new details. The comically high-energy, rocking new adventure begins with guests coming into the museum-like setting. It's actually a Tanalir Tivians, is that right? Tanalir Tivians collection, filled with amazing objects he obtained from across the universe. To keep visitors coming back again. Again and again, it will be a living collection with something new added frequently and stuffed with Easter eggs. There will be more Easter eggs in this ride than any other ride at Disney. Quesada. You see, it's all Latin.
Quesada
said, as for the ride itself, Rocket is your guide through this high-stakes caper, and he needs your human hand to get him in so he can break out his fellow guardians. Rocket isn't one for thoughtful execution because his plan to shut down the generator means creatures escape, elevators stop working, thus starting the adventure. To ensure visitors don't tire of it as well, there will be multiple versions of the ride. Well, that's cool that they're going to mix it up.
Well, they do this already on Star Tours. Like when you go and ride Star Tours, the computer will randomly auto-generate, I think if I'm not wrong, 3 to 4 different ride sequences. So you will either start off on the planet Hoth, you'll start off on the planet Tatooine, or wherever, and each time you'll go to a different planet. So you can actually get off and get on, and have 4 different rides on the same ride.
Gotcha.
So I think that's what they're going with. They're going to have multiple variations. And so that's going to be a really cool experience. It's going to entice you to want to ride it more.
So are they going to keep this exclusive to just California, or are they going to do it in the Orlando park as well?
Well, there is no plans as of yet. Orlando, but that doesn't mean that it's not on the chopping block.
I guess they may be testing out to see how it reacts with people, and then probably, they'll go forward if it's a really big thing.
They're probably going to test the technologies just to kind of see where they are. Yeah.
I know it's a dated story, the Twilight Zone, but I really like that. I kind of like the Tower of Terror.
It's old
school.
It's
my favorite ride in the whole park.
It's an old school ride, and honestly, it's one of my favorite rides at Hollywood Studios, and so when they get rid of that, that's not going to be the same, but that's my personal.
I know. Okay. I'm team old school.
I'm team old school. Hashtag team old school all the way. So from some DC news and into the realm of Marvel with the whole Guardians thing. With the filming underway of Marvel's Black Panther, a cast of stars has already been spotted coming or going from the set. Now, Chadwick Boseman was spotted dressed as T'Challa, wearing a dark suit and the dress shirt. So we've already seen him. We remember him from... Civil War. He was accompanied by an older woman with a purple head wrap and wearing a silver cross around her neck. Also wearing, also The Walking Dead's very own Michonne. Yes, Michonne, which is Dania Guerra, was photographed with her newly shaved and tattooed head. Guerrera will also play Okoye in the film. So I think I said that right, Okoye.
It looks right.
Yeah.
So, I like it. Sounds good.
So is this her cinematic debut? From Walking Dead into...
It may be. I'm not familiar with her as an actress to know that for sure, but it may be at least her big break if she's been in some, maybe some smaller roles elsewhere.
Maybe she's playing the Black Panther's love interest.
Ooh. Or maybe, I don't know how Black Panther does his thing, but it may be some other, you know, back from his home country kind of thing. Well, we're going to continue with a little bit more Black Panther news anyways while we're talking on the topic. As filming is in the full swing for Black Panther, Marvel has another small production. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It's not Black Panther. I thought it was. Another small production will begin filming on Monday as well. The sequel with the Avengers Infinity War, you guys. We're starting that finally. Yay! Casting members have been preparing for the epic battle that will take place within the film. Now, it looks like the movie is getting ready to have its big baddie on board to shoot. According to the recent Instagram post, Josh Brolin is starting to get in touch with his evil side.
Ooh.
As he's preparing to bring Thanos to life. The post from the Brolin's personal Instagram account and showed side-by-side photo of the actor and Thanos. The caption of the post simply said, "Next." So that's kind of cool. Look at all that makeup, though.
Is that makeup or CGI?
I don't know. I would think it would have to be CGI. Can you imagine acting and all that on your face?
Well, Thanos is like 8 feet tall. He's like seven feet. He's a huge dude.
You know what? I think it's probably a combination of both.
It could be, yeah. It could be like what they do with Vision.
That's what I would do.
Vision in close-up shots is actually, you know, Paul Bettany, whereas if you get him in far-away shots, it's CGI.
Yeah. I would try to make it as real as possible.
That makeup, though.
That's hardcore. All those little cracks and crevices in there.
And that is so comic book true, too, because when you think of Thanos, you think of those, like, grooves in his chin and how his chin comes down. I mean, he just, that is wicked.
I'm going to throw a shout out to our friend Carlos in the chat.
What's up, Mr. Phoenix?
Thanks for stopping by.
All right. Well, our last news segment of this week, this month, one of the country's most popular comic book stores has been open for 20 years. Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, located in Red Bank, New Jersey. Smith took to Facebook to post a commemorative certificate he received from Diamond Comic Distributors, which signified the accomplishment. In the post, Smith gets a nostalgic feeling as he goes over some of the shop's highs and lows over the past two decades. Originally located on Monmouth Street in Red Bank, New Jersey, the store moved to its current location after 2 years in existence. Jay and Silent Bob Secret Stash, also known as just The Stash, to some of the store's closest fellow goers, is filming the location of AMC's famous Comic Book Men, which I happen to watch pretty religiously right after The Walking Dead.
That does not surprise me at all.
Yes, I'm currently caught up.
You kind of like comic books just a little bit. Yeah, I don't know if anybody knows that.
I mean, if you ever watch the show, you know that they bring in some of the oldest relics in comic history. And some of these things I forget about or I've forgotten about from my childhood. And they'll bring in something from 1981 or 1975. I'm like, holy cow.
I'll be like, oh my God, I remember that.
Exactly.
It was awesome.
I mean, obscure things you can't find anywhere. And it's awesome. There is definitely a market for that stuff. But with all that said, I think we're going to transition now into our actual topic for this week, which is origin stories. And Mr. Sinister and Cable. Now, there's a reason why these two names are together. And there's a reason why we chose this. All right. So Mr. Sinister is the evil big bad. Cable is kind of the anti-hero in the line of Deadpool. And he's a leader. And he's also a leader of the New Mutants and all that stuff. But we're going to get into it. Why is Mr. Sinister? How is Mr. Sinister and Cable connected? And why were they
dive into the X-Men world?
Exactly. So when you think of X-Men Apocalypse, which is just the recent movie of the X-Men franchise, if you stayed in your seats in the theater, you would have noticed at the end of the theater there was a name drop to Nathan Essex, which is Mr. Sinister. So that means that the X-Men franchise from Fox is going to be introducing Mr. Sinister at some point. Now, Cable. Why are we talking about Cable? Well, Deadpool number 2. That's why. Coming in 2018. Deadpool will be filming soon, hopefully, and It has been rumored that Cable will be one of Deadpool's sidekicks in the upcoming film. So that's the reason why we want to give you some backstory into this, okay?
Absolutely.
So first and foremost, we're going to start with Mr. Sinister, okay? And all right. I remember reading about him when I was a kid, and this guy, you don't want to mess with him. He's right up there with Apocalypse, and he's not more powerful than Apocalypse, but he's definitely somebody you don't want to get in a bad alley with. I'm just saying that right off the bat. So, yeah, writer Chris Claremont conceived Mr. Sinister as an all-new villain for X-Men, and having kind of felt tired of going back to Magneto and back to the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and just the same old redundant villain after villain.
It gets old after a while. Yeah. Mix it up a little bit.
So he had a brainchild moment. He's like, wait, what if I create somebody that's been there the whole time during the X-Men universe?
Can I just say, look at those teeth?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's scary stuff.
But he's actually got a really, really sinister background, which is how he got his name. So here we go. Nathaniel Essex was born in Victorian England during the 19th century, and he was obsessed with Charles Darwin's theory of evolution. Although he was truly passionate about his work, he also cared a great deal for his wife, Rebecca Essex, and their son. Disaster struck when their son died at age 4 of various birth defects, including crooked bones, get this, and hemophilia.
Which is
what I have, hemophilia.
That's right.
So, to cope with the pain of the loss, Essex started to intensify his work in theories about evolution, ignoring his, again, pregnant wife for most of the time as a result. So she's pregnant. Aww, he's caught in his work. Yeah. So the pain and the loss of his son had a profound impact on Essex. Where he was once a passionate and gentle man, he became more and more secluded and ignorant to the people around him. Unbeknownst to his wife, Essex even exhumed the body of his son as a test subject in hopes of figuring out what had caused his death. His research eventually evolved into a theory of humanity was steadily evolving with various mutations as possible outcomes. He classified the possibilities as, quote-unquote, the Essex factors. Yes.
I liked how we both quoted at the same time. That was really fun.
Essex factors.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So when Essex brought forth these theories to his scientific peers, among them Charles Darwin, he was ridiculed and called a monster for coming up with these ungodly theories. Cut off from funding, he visited a bar to drink away his sorrows. Essex was then contacted by a man who wanted to show him something that would pique his interest. Curious, Essex was brought to the sewers of London, where a man told him that he was part of a group of average workmen who kidnapped disfigured humans from London and locked them in the sewers. Yeah, that's not a normal hangout at all.
That's routine.
At first, Essex was horrified by the sight of these people and wanted to get away, but he was stopped by the group of men who suddenly attacked him for his money. The group told Essex that they called themselves the Marauders.
The Marauders.
Right? The Marauders.
Yes.
It was then that Essex made them an offer. With funding stopped for his research, Essex offered the Marauders money in exchange for a suitable subjects that he could use in his experiments. The team agreed and started kidnapping more people from the streets to act as test subjects on mutation.
Now, you can tell this dude is diving down a rabbit hole, and I just want to pause right quick and say hello to my buddy Jeff Brown.
Hey, Jeff.
He does an insane Arnold Schwarzenegger. At some point, we got to get him on the show.
Man, I want to hear that.
I know. It's pretty awesome. So, as you can see, there's things going on, and he's diving down a rabbit hole that's not good for him. So the Marauders, in their search for mutants, accidentally stumbled upon a disguised Apocalypse.
Oh.
Get it? Apocalypse from X-Men? Who had been awoken from his slumber some days before. After seeing his mind, the Marauders told Apocalypse about Nathaniel Essex's works and led him to his estate. Apocalypse introduced himself to Essex as Insambul Nur, and that's what he goes by. If you remember, if you watched the movie, he was Egyptian. He was an Egyptian god. And told him that he saw the potential in Essex and his work, and he asked Essex to help him in the rise to power. In return, Essex was promised power beyond belief in exchange. Essex's wife, Rebecca, was a witness to all of this, and in disgust, she left the room. Essex was in such great turmoil, wanting to be a good man, but also not wanting the restrictions for his research that he had pretty much spent his entire life working for in his human morality. At first, Essex thought Apocalypse to be a madman, crazy. This all changed when he discovered Apocalypse's true form and power. In this, he saw a living proof of his theory of a mutated master race. Essex brought Apocalypse to meet the most powerful men of London. It was, however, then that the time-displaced X-Men, Cyclops, and Jean Grey arrived from the future to stop Apocalypse and his plan. So the two X-Men immediately recognized Essex as a man who would go on to become Mr. Sinister. The two X-Men persuaded Essex that it was not too late to stay a good man. Essex took their words for granted and returned to his estate, where Rebecca was in premature labor with their second child. The child was delivered stillborn.
Oh my goodness.
I know. Doctors also told Essex that his wife would not survive the premature labor, so now she's on the line. Essex begs his wife to hold on so that he could make her better. He promised her that he would be there for her again and again. His pleas, however, were met with resentment and hate from his wife. With her dying breath, she told him that she had loved him and once now utterly hated him for what he had done and what he had became, quote unquote, sinister.
Oh my goodness.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm crying, guys. That's so sad. Oh my gosh. Okay, so after her death, Essex wrecked his house and the graves of his ancestors, thinking to commit suicide afterwards. Now that is crazy fit. That's like a human, like a grown-up tantrum right there,
that's
you guys.
That's a rabbit hole. Yeah.
He could not live with the guilt he felt. Essex went by Charles Darwin's house first, however, to tell him how wrong Darwin was and how truly right he had been. After leaving Darwin's house, he once again wanted to kill himself until he saw Darwin's young children on the stairs of this house. Oh my gosh, I can't even... All right, here we go. Rabbit hole it is. All right. Essex then changed his mind and went to Apocalypse and accepted his offer to grant him mutations that gave him a longer life, advanced strength, and a healing factor. A result of mutation would be that Essex would no longer feel morality or remorse, something Essex welcomed. When asked by Apocalypse to take on another name, Essex took on the name Sinister as an adjective to the last words of his dying wife that had named him that. So, man.
What a story, right? To create a supervillain.
Dark background.
That's deep, man. That's diving down the rabbit hole of Mr. Sinister.
I'm just going to have to digest that for a minute. Hold on.
Yeah. Two children, both of them dead. His wife hated him. He couldn't fix his wife.
Made a deal with literally the devil.
He made a deal with Apocalypse. Apocalypse is the first mutant. He's the first mutant. So he has more power than any of the other mutants. And
that's
so,
crazy.
Except with the exception of Jean Grey.
So we'll dive into the story arcs and evolution.
Yeah.
All right. So Mr. Sinister made his debut a couple years past the Bronze Age and instantly made his impact in the comics when he orchestrated the massacre of the underground mutants known as the Morlocks. Strictly seen as a villain who acts behind the scenes, it is later revealed that Mr. Sinister has an obsessive fixation on Scott Summers, the X-Men also known as Cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
Sinister was involved in many arcs throughout his first appearance, from Uncanny X-Men number 221 through Wolverine's origin, Sinister Nazi, Mutant Massacre, X-Factor, Legacy Virtue, Legacy Virus, are more importantly, the cloning of Jean Grey story arc. Now, that's a whole lot of stories to be a part of.
Yes, and we're getting ready to give into that. So don't forget Mr. Sinister. Don't forget his obsession with Scott Summers. And don't forget the fact that now Jean Grey is here. So
all
these
right.
are three.
So is it like a hatred fixation, or is he
You're gonna dive in the rabbit hole.
There's so many questions about Cyclops now. Oh my gosh, you guys! Right,
so, wanting to rid himself of Apocalypse, Mr. Sinister devises a plan that includes Cyclops and Jean Grey. Sinister believes the offspring of these two could be so strong enough that it could destroy Apocalypse. So now Essex is trying to figure out a way to get rid of the guy that created him. If I could get rid of Apocalypse, then I could be the most powerful mutant. Get it? So unfortunately, Jean goes missing and is presumed dead. So what does Mr. Sinister do? Well, he ends
makes another one.
He clones Jean Grey and calls the clone Madeline Pryor. Now, Madeline, however, doesn't seem to possess the powers of Jean, and Sinister thinks that he's failed. Jean returns from the dead, supposedly, and dies before she and Cyclops are married and able to have children. Now, this is a story arc that goes beyond the X-Men story arc, okay?
This is a weird, twisted story.
The Phoenix Force, however, that was in Jean Grey, if you remember at the end of Apocalypse, spoiler alert, if you watch the movie X-Men Apocalypse, Jean Grey unleashes the Phoenix, which pretty much disintegrates Apocalypse right there. So the Phoenix Force sees Jean's clone and inhabits Madeline Pryor's body, giving Madeline the powers of the Phoenix and Jean Grey. Sinister sees her worth and puts Jean's memories in her mind while putting her in a position to meet Cyclops. So he's kind of setting it up. If I can get Cyclops and Jean Grey together, they can have a child. That child will be powerful enough, and then it will overthrow Apocalypse.
So he went from evil guy to matchmaker?
Wait just a second. It gets better. Cyclops sees so much of Jean and Madeline that he does marry her. Sinister mentally suggests that the two move to Alaska, away from him, to monitor, and that way he can monitor the two and take possession of any child that those two have. Here we go. Cyclops and Madeline do have a child. Nathaniel Christopher Charles Summers. All right.
Gee, I wonder who they named Charles after.
Get it? Yeah, Charles Xavier, Charles Summers. Anyway. So Sinister watches and then takes the child, but later loses him to a goblin queen, the now spurned and ex-wife of Cyclops. He is able to take the child back, only to lose him yet again to Cyclops. As retribution, Cyclops reduces Sinister to a mere skeleton. He takes off his goggles, he unleashes his beam, and it just disintegrates him on the spot.
The wrath of a father.
Sinister's hope in using Cyclops' offspring to overthrow Apocalypse eventually does work, though not the way that Mr. Sinister had planned. This is where Cable comes in. Cable is Nathan Christopher Charles Summers, the child of Madeline Pryor and Scott Summers. All right, so we're going to get into Cable here in just a second. So powers and abilities. Mr. Sinister is genetically altered human with superhuman physical and mental abilities. The character is telepathic, able to manipulate the minds of others in various ways, and is capable of energy projection through telekinesis. What? So, using genetic material from mutant courier, Mr. Sinister gained complete control of his body and at the cellular level, allowing him to shapeshift, regenerate, and virtually become immune to any of his injuries. The character has exhibited the ability to teleport, though Beast believes this is accomplished through his Tesseract headquarters. Mr. Sinister is also a scientific genius, as we have talked about earlier, with expertise in fields of biology, genetics, cloning, physics, and engineering. The character is a master manipulator and a planner with decades of genetic research at his command.
Oh my gosh, so basically this guy is dang near unstoppable.
Pretty much, yeah. But Scott Summers took him out, though.
True.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to get into Cable now. So, Lindsay Badger.
Yes, we're going to dive into Cable, or Christopher Charles Summers, as you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. All right. So the character Cable was created by Rob Liefeld, the Deadpool creator, mm-hmm. and was mostly framed by writers Louise Simonson, or mm-hmm. yes, Simonson, and Fabian. Oh my gosh, Joe, help. Thank you, Nikiza, who patterned the character after Liefeld's plots. It wasn't until much later that Nathan Christopher Summers, infant son of Cyclops and the mercenary visiting from the future, were linked as being the same individual. Cable, born Christopher Charles Summers, is the son of Scott Summers and Madeline Pryor, a clone of Jean Grey. As Mr. Citizen had hoped to use the boy as a weapon against Apocalypse, but was unable to do so. Apocalypse infected the infant with a techno-organic virus, an incurable affliction. Cable was taken to the future and raised. He returned to the present to fight strife and to stop the assassination of Apocalypse. The Ascension, thank you. Ascension of Apocalypse in the future. Scott and Jean care for the baby, keeping the name Nathan Christopher. Apocalypse, apparently having learned of Sinister's plan at some point, abducts baby Nathan and infects him with a deadly techno-organic virus on the Inhumans' lunar base before X-Factor can save him.
So you can see at a very early age, Mr. Sinister hated him. And yeah, for that fact, infected him with a virus that would pretty much take one of his eyes and one of his arms. And as you see in the picture, he doesn't have an eye. He's actually got a cyborg eye.
And he's got the robot arm.
That's his gauntlet arm, which actually houses some rockets inside of it, which is kind of cool.
Oh, that's badass.
All right, yeah. So Ascani is a member of the Sisterhood of the Future that fights against Apocalypse, the Ascani clan. And they appear and tell Cyclops that Nathan will die from the TO virus unless she takes him 2,000 years into the future. Now this is where Cyclops goes into the future. He has no choice but to agree and allows his son to be sent to the future with X-Factor's sentiment computer ship watching over him. And this is where he gets his cybernetic arm, his cybernetic eye, and the TO virus is pretty much paused in his body.
And good.
Ship created the Celestials, and once under Apocalypse's control, had been almost destroyed by a similar TO virus and reduced to a pod that lay dormant in young Nathan's chest cavity with the eons of information lost or damaged when it entered into the time stream. Now, the leader of the Ascani clan, known as Mother Ascani, turns out to be a time-displaced Rachel Summers, which is Scott and Jean's daughter from another reality. What?
Wow, so, there's timelines all over the place right here.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot going on. Nate is cloned in case he doesn't survive Ascani's treatment for the virus. However, the Ascani are attacked by those loyal to Apocalypse who take the clone, believing it to be the real Nathan. Apocalypse raises the infant as the heir to the future vessel and dubs him Strife. So this is Cable's evil twin brother, Strife.
So of course it is.
They call him Strife the Chaos Bringer. Despite the doubts, Nathan survives the TO infection. Nathan, however, is raised for a short time by Rachel. Of course, Cable's story arcs are vast, long-running, and include six-pack. First, look at that. I actually have that comic. I have that particular comic. First Contact, Clan Chosen, The New Mutants, as you see right here. He becomes the leader of the New Mutants. X-Force. Cable and Deadpool actually form a story arc together, and they become best friends. And there's also the Messiah Complex was another great story arc, as well as X-Sanction.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You've got quite a stack of stories, too.
Yeah, there's so much to dive into when you get into these.
Man, so let's run through his powers and abilities real quick, and then we can move forward. All right. So Cable still has his innate powers to a much lesser degree, despite no longer having the virus. He's still capable of telekinetic, as he has shown to still be able to fling multiple obese creatures that were able to give Colossus a pause through a wall, and he could raise a shield that could block a punch from Colossus that would have killed him. His current level of telepathy is still sufficient enough for basic communications, and when he was temporarily able to stun a small group of Avengers composed of Thor, Rogue, Sunfire, Captain America, and Havoc long enough for his team to escape, but he collapsed afterwards. Due to the techno-organic virus being purged from his body, Cable's body is suffering from the after effects for having to fight it off for so long. He is also a time traveler by using chronal energies, super strength, infrared vision due to bionic implants, and large guns called bionic gauntlets as his mechanical arm. That's pretty stacked.
So basically, he suffers, and this is talked about in the comics, Cable suffers from various forms of atrophy, where his joints and his legs and his arms are pretty much paralyzed. And so he has to rely on his mechanical parts of his body to help him do what he needs to do and be able to fight all the things he does. So you think about, so let's wrap this up. So you have Nathaniel Essex, you know, you heard the backstory about it, but between his two dead children and his wife who was dying in child labor, becomes Mr. Sinister through a shady deal with Apocalypse. The Mr. Sinister thinks he's better than Apocalypse. So he plans a way to get rid of him, and he brings in Scott Summers and Jean Grey, who were at the time X-Men's big couple. And he's like, if these two can have a kid, then basically he would embody so much of mutation that he would actually be able to overthrow Apocalypse. And so what happens is Jean Grey goes missing, and they make a clone of Jean Grey, and it's Madeline Pryor. Madeline Pryor and Scott Summers marry, have a kid, and it becomes Cable. Cable becomes infected with the TO virus from Nathaniel Essex. So they send Cable 2,000 years into the future where he is cured and healed with organic implants. Then he comes back to the present and basically assumes his role as the leader of the New Mutants and many other story arcs thereafter. So there really quickly is the tie-in between Mr. Sinister and Cable. So now going into the movies with upcoming Fox's New Mutants roll out, and they're doing X-23. We've already
seen Inhumans are coming up this summer.
They're doing all kinds of things with X-Men, New Mutants. I don't know what they're going to be doing with Inhumans. I don't know what the plan is with that. I don't know if that's going to be a movie.
I haven't heard.
Or if it's going to be a TV series. I don't really know.
And of course, Deadpool too.
Yeah. So we're going to see Cable and Deadpool. Probably.
So what percentage is Machine?
I would say a good
half.
If you're looking at it on a scale of, he's got his right arm, his right leg, and right of his, so pretty much half his body, I guess.
Okay, so pretty close to 50% of his body is all biomechanical. That's incredible.
But he was sent to the future. They healed him of his virus because in the future they had a cure for the TO virus, and. So there you go. And now when actually Cable drops in the Deadpool film, hopefully we get Cable and Deadpool 2. There's probably not going to be so much backstory in Cable. Everybody's going to be like wondering, everybody knows Cable from the X-Men comics, but going into it, nobody knows really his backstory as much. They don't know that he's actually Scott Summers and Jean Grey's child. So that's
why we do these stories, so that you can get a little bit of extra nerd nuggets there.
So, we got some really cool things to expect from Fox. You know, they've already dropped Nathan Essex at the end of Apocalypse, X-Men Apocalypse. They've already dropped his name on a briefcase. So we're going to get Sinister at some point in some shape or form.
He's going to show up eventually.
So there you have it. The connections between Sinister and Cable. And so, like I said, both of these characters are going to be coming to the Fox franchise in future films. So you heard it here first. You can find this stuff in encyclopedias. Marvel Encyclopedia gives you some history about Mr. Sinister and Cable. But you can subscribe.
Our friend Jeff over in the chat has an interesting question. Who do you think should play Cable and Mr. Sinister?
For me personally, I think Cable would be Ron Perlman, who played Hellboy.
That would be a good one.
That would be my pick. He was also in Sons of Anarchy. And then for Mr. Sinister,
he would have made a really good Thanos too.
Mr. Sinister, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say somebody that's probably not somebody you wouldn't think of, and that would be Norman Reedus from Walking Dead.
Oh,
because
okay.
Now, the reason why I say that is Norman has.
I see it though.
Norman has he has a physique. He has an astounding acting ability to convey emotion, and I think that'll be important because of his ability to portray sorrow and sadness going
into. He has
into,
such a dark background of a character. He would really.
But that would
do
be my
well
two picks: Ron Perlman and Norman Reedus. I mean,
that would be a great combo. I like that. Good picks.
I don't know. I mean, Mr. Sinister is kind of one of those characters that can be really played by anybody. But I don't. It would be nice to have Mr. Norman Reedus in some form in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I'm just.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway.
Mr. Sinister with those sharp little teeth.
Yeah. So there you have it, guys. That is our origin stories. It's going to be really awesome when we dive into the next one. I'm not going to say anything about our next origin stories. You'll hear about it in a couple of weeks, but it's going to be really
good. It's going to be good.
So as always, guys, if you see something exciting on the shelves at your local comic book shop or in the theater and around geek culture in general, let us know. Drop us a line on social media with our new hashtag, YoPopX, okay? So if you see something and you want to let us know about it, use that tag and we'll feature your image on an upcoming show, just like we did on this show with Lindsay Badger's Zelda Symphony.
Absolutely. Also, you guys, we are a part of an amazing network called Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to gonnageek.com and check out some of the amazing podcasts on our home network.
Yes. And be sure to follow us on social media. We have Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, Pinterest, all at PopXCast. You can also email us, and that is popxcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from all of our faithful listeners and subscribers. Also, for future and past shows, check out our official website, www.popxcast.com.
That's right. And you can find me, Lindsay Badger, at LR Badger, pretty much anywhere on the interwebs.
Yes. And I am Joe Burke, a.k.a. at Rotcav, R-O-T-C-A-V, on the internet. And, of course, hats off to this amazing Team PopX that does such an amazing job week after week. We come here, we bring a show to you, we publish it out, but it doesn't take just one person to do all that. It takes a handful of people who are just voluntarily committed to doing this. And so I want to say thank you, Miss Lindsay Badger, for sharing and caring and loving on us so much and just showing all the love that you do over in the chat room and for sharing this like mad crazy in social media. You're like a sharing, I don't know, it's insane.
I'm just trying to spread the word of geekiness, you know. You got to preach the word.
I think you do a good job.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward.
But you do a good job too,
and
Joe.
I'm looking forward to playing Mario Kart with you on the Nintendo
it
Switch.
It is on.
Yeah.
March can't get here fast enough, dude. I'm telling you.
I know. March is going to be so good. Anyway.
And don't forget Mikey and his awesome graphics.
I know. Mikey does an awesome
Always
job.
On point. Every
really?
Single week.
Really? So we get a dance of Vader,
yes,
guys.
Yes, Vader.
Thanks, Mikey. We love you, dude.
And also our absent but also well-loved co-host Austin.
Yes.
He had some technical difficulties tonight, and I'm sure he will return next week.
He was with us. And he was with us for about 20 minutes trying to have some. But we love you, Austin. We love you very much. Hopefully, you're listening and watching.
You are a very important part of this little group of love here. Yes. So,
well, next week, guys, is going to be a really awesome episode. And Austin will be here as well as Mike. And maybe some guests along the way, but PopX officially turns 1 year old next
Should I
week.
Bake a cake or something? I really feel like I need to like blow up some party balloons or something because it's been a year, Joe. We've been doing this for 12 months.
And it's actually really cool. I mean, this is going to be our 46th episode next week. We're officially 1 year old. I never dreamed in a million years that it would last as long as it has, but you guys continuing to download, giving us feedback, pouring into us, and hopefully us pouring into you. It's been a really great journey and a great ride. And with geek culture blooming the way it is and just literally thriving in so many ways, and with movies and cinematics and comics and just Star Wars and geek culture and all everything that's going on right now, pretty much we have so much fuel for the fire to continue this thing on for many, many months to come. So hats off. And so PopX turns one next month, next week rather. So we're going to have a party. We're going to have fun, and we want you guys to join us. Share it out on your Instagram, share it on your Facebooks and tweets. And yeah, that's it. Pretty much all I got to say. We're done. We're done here.
We'll see you guys next week.
All right. You guys take care. God bless. And we'll see you next week on PopX's 1 year. Holy cow. We'll see you next week. Bye.
From everyone at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXcast. Get your geek on.